Hello, this is The Science of Happiness. I'm your host, and my name is Lori Purdy Fatel. I'm a certified occupational therapy assistant, also known as a COTA, and I've worked in Metro Detroit since 1992. I went to college for OT with one thing in mind, and that was to work with the brain injured. In the last 2 years, I've been blessed to do so. Our Father God has given me guidance throughout my life, and I find when I listen and when I follow his guidance, I realize abundance. I pray for all who are troubled. Tonight, I want to dedicate my show to someone very close to me who is recuperating from cancer surgery, Robin Navaroli. Bird, I love you, and I look forward to many years of happiness with you. I would like to begin tonight's show with a prayer. I found it to be true. When I pray constantly, I make better choices in every aspect of my life. This evening, I will pray for me as a host and for all of my listeners. Dear Lord, our Heavenly Father, please guide me, help me with my words, and bring correction and silence to my mind when needed. Many of us have survived some sort of brain injury, and many of us are struggling with demons within ourselves. Let us think for a moment of instances where we have spoken too quickly or responded before we thought. Please forgive us for any rude or uncaring actions. I need your forgiveness in this area more than I wish to admit. Help us to remember when anger and madness fill our minds, how these feelings come from the devil. All that is good is from God, and with your help, strength, and calmness, we can overcome impulsivity. Bring the thought to our mind to stop and take a few deep breaths. Let us take a second when needed to inhale your love and exhale all. Help us to recognize your ability to help us when we feel not what we used to be. Help us in finding our place in our individual worlds where we can have happiness and comfort. You have shown me through the years that when I am uncomfortable with myself and my presence with others, that I can be happy. I pray to you, the divine healer, that you open our hearts and minds to comfort, to ability to stop negative thoughts, and how we can continually build ourselves to an unending happiness. May everyone listening feel your love and be kept from evil. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, dear Lord. Amen. I suffered a TBI years ago when I was 24 years old. As I speak to you tonight, I am almost 52, and I'm very happy to share my age. Like many of us survivors, after the TBI, I was told I was clinically dead 3 times. So it's proper to tell that I almost did not live to be 25, which makes being over 50 a blessing. Back in the day, everything in my life was a dream come true. I was almost 25 years old. I had a recent promotion in business that inspired me with dreams for my future. I was attending college at night. I had recently moved out of my parents' home for the first time. I had many friends, and I was on the fast track to the future with the man I had been in love with for about 5 years. Then, on a beautiful sunny morning, as I drove on the freeway to my job, a construction truck dropped bales of hay onto my windshield, causing me to lose control of my car, spinning off the road into cement construction materials. From that point forward, my dreams were taken away. I was diagnosed with a TBI in a mild coma for 7 days, and it took about 6 years of therapy and extensive study before I was able to function like an adult again. The day I became comfortable with myself and happy to be alive is the day that I look at, like many other brain injury survivors say, as my re-birthday. my rebirth year is 1992. So emotionally and mentally, I say that I am not 50-ish, but I am something, 30-something-ish. 1992 is the year I completed college for occupational therapy and received my certification and state license to practice as an occupational therapy assistant. I have been blessed with the internal strength and enough brain matter that I have been able to return to college and work with the brain healthy, those that I refer to as the normals. Before brain injury, I never would have chose employment in healthcare. It has now been 20 years, and I have worked in various therapy departments throughout Metro Detroit. And for the past 2 years, and even a little more, I specialized in brain injury. Upon my rebirth day, I began to have wants and dreams for my future again. My main dream was to have the ability to make the lives of others who have suffered any kind of brain injury easier. I want to encourage everyone to begin to continue to create goals. If you've ever formally written goals or used a planner, if you have never formally written goals or used a planner, I suggest you give it a try. Following is an excerpt from an article that I read on the internet, author unknown. How to choose life goals. There is no perfect answer here. Some people have known for a while now what they really want, but just haven't pursued it. And for them, it just takes a little contemplation to realize that what they've wanted all along. Others will have a more difficult time, as they have never figured out what their dream is or what they'd like to accomplish. For them, I have a few suggestions. Take some time for quiet contemplation. Think about what's important to you. Think about what you'd like people to say about you when you die. Brainstorm. Make a list of all the things you'd like to do in life, things that sound fun and exciting and wonderful, and then choose the best of that list. You don't have to come up with your life goals right now. You could just think of something you'd like to achieve over the next 6 months or a year, and continue to explore different things until you find your dream. How to get there? If you know your goals, the next question is how to get there. A great method that I've seen numerous times, most recently by Mark Joyner in his Simpleology system, is called backward planning, a method used by the military. Basically, here's how it works. Have a clearly defined goal and a clearly defined outcome. You should be able to visualize what it looks like when you've accomplished that outcome. What is the last thing you'll need to do to achieve that outcome? If your goal is to publish a novel, for example, the last thing you'll need to do before the publisher does the layout and design is edit and submit the final draft. What is the next thing you need to do just before that step? In the above example, or the example that I just read, you might want to get an outsider editor to review your draft and give you criticisms and suggestions. What is this thing you'll need to do before that last step? In this example, you'd need to do a revised draft to submit to the editor, and so on until you get the first step. The first step is what you need to focus on. In the novel example, you might have brainstormed novel ideas as your first step. That was the article. Kind of interesting. The whole point is, if we have goals, it helps give our life meaning. Back to my story and how I've learned about goals. Just a few years before I was injured, my boyfriend and his college professor father were very much into goals and planning. My boyfriend did everything he he could to get me to start making plans and start using a planner. At the time, I was a hairdresser, trying to find a new me and a new occupation, trying to become an independent adult. A planner seemed crazy. Sure, I kept records of my clients, and I kept a calendar to know when important dates came up. Did I really need to get all involved in goals? I began with small goals and fun goals. Like, one goal was that I wanted to wear a different outfit every day of the week. I never wanted to wear the same outfit twice. Gotta start somewhere, right? I went to a planner class, a Franklin planner class, actually, and learned different techniques for writing goals and finding goals. That was about 30 years ago, and I'm sure techniques and goal planning can be found on the internet, and you don't have to go to a class anymore. Probably could anyways. Anyway, I learned how to take a goal, like wanting to wear a different outfit every day, and make it happen. So this show is the science of happiness, and what does creating a goal have to do with happiness? When I accomplish a goal, I am happy. We are all individuals, and we all have our own unique perspectives on life. I'm going to share with you what works for me. You and I may see things differently, and that's okay. Let me tell you one thing that I definitely contribute to my ability to find happiness again. That is belief in a higher power. Me personally, I am a firm believer and follower of Jesus Christ. You may not be, and that's okay. I suggest to everyone to find something that will allow you to take the burden of life off your shoulders. That means maybe to find a safe and healthy or non-detrimental hobby, like watching the Tigers. When people can allow themselves to get out of themselves and concentrate on something bigger, happiness comes more easily. My hobby is and always has been to read and listen to well-known speakers. I can't even begin to tell you how many books I've read in my lifetime, nor can I tell how many motivational speakers I've listened to, watched, and met. I was born into a Christian family, and out of obligation, I went to church regularly as a child. When I was in my teens, I attended church, not so much out of obligation, but because church was a place where I could meet people and participate in safe activities. As I became an adult, I started to participate in Bible studies. In early adulthood, a lot of time in study of how to earn a living and how to become a good person, how to have friends, and learning what my personal standards and limitations were. As I told you earlier, I was an early adult when I became brain injured, and that changed my life. I've now been a brain injury survivor for more years than I was a normal. After the injury, my family and friends encouraged me to continue my search to learn what I was most comfortable with, how I was most comfortable with myself, and to build myself into the person that I wanted to be. Today, the person I am is the person I want to be. And I attribute that in part to my study of motivation and God. I'd like to share some audio that I have found from Anthony Robbins. Let me cue it up. This is Tony Robbins, Living Your Life, Living Your Purpose, and winning at the game. Living your purpose and winning at the game.
But in the end, the most important thing is, what's the purpose of your life? Why are you here? That's what we want to talk about today. We got to look at what makes you really do what you do. Everything on earth has a purpose, and you do too. That purpose provides an inner drive that once you tap into it, can give your life immense fulfillment. It will also give you certainty. Because, you know, right now, we're in a world that's changing so rapidly that virtually every time you turn around, you hear about something else that's changing. And I personally get to deal with hundreds of thousands of people per year. I see about 250 to 300,000 people a year in my live programs. And I hear so much excitement, and I also hear so much fear about the pace of change. I mean, we've all talked about changes happening so rapidly now and paradigm shifts. All this stuff has become so overused at this point that we've become numb to it. But it's true. Never in the history of the world have things changed so rapidly. So you need to find something that's eternal inside of yourself, that no matter what changes on the surface, this part of you does not change. It's the part you come back to, the part that guides you, the part that really makes you fulfilled. And that's your purpose, because all of a sudden, when you find that a friend's got cancer, or you turn around and you see that 35,000 people at IBM got laid off, or an entire industry disappeared overnight because a new one was created, it'll give you a way to find some good in virtually anything. Your purpose is available to you at any moment in your life, but you've got to know what it is. Before we get into it, let me back up a little bit here. Okay, I have a good friend who's one of the most successful financial people in the country. He works in all these financial markets. He's an incredibly successful businessman. I know he's working very hard right now on a goal. I went to visit him recently, and boy, he's working hard, and he's going to achieve that goal. But, you know, when the goal's finally there, then he's going to be happy. I thought, no. You know, each moment we've got to be able to find some sense of meaning for our lives, something that is significant, something that is useful. And we all know this is not a new conversation, but as your coach and as your friend in these days, I'd like to draw your attention to some things that maybe you already know but haven't thought about for a while. Maybe get you to put some of your focus into the most important area of life, which is enhancing meaning. All of us in life have to have a reason to be here. If all you're doing out there is going out and trying to achieve goals, and then you achieve them, then I'm sure you run into that trip-up wire that says, okay, I've achieved the goal, and now what? Right? You achieve the goal, and your brain says, is this all there is? See, the purpose of the goal, as I've shared with you so many times, is not to achieve the goal. The purpose of the goal is what it makes of us as people, who we become. Ultimately, we know we have to have a sense that who we even have become has some kind of meaning. Without that, there's not a reason to live. There's not a reason to get up. There's not a reason to go out there and make it happen. What's really controlling this man's life is fear. When people say they're cynical or they're pessimistic, what they're really screaming out to you is, I'm scared out of my mind. I'm afraid to dream again. I'm afraid to think about what's possible. I'm afraid to really put myself on the line. I'm going to go for something. I'm going to stand for something. I'm going to put myself on the line in a relationship or my business or my vision to make a difference in the world. But you know what? Maybe at one time this person did that. Maybe they tried it several times and it didn't work and they got pain and pain and pain. Pretty soon they didn't want the pain, so they stopped dreaming. They stopped envisioning. They stopped coming up with meaning. Instead, they try to keep themselves away from the pain by saying, well, there's no meaning at all anyway. And unfortunately, that gives you the ultimate pain because it gives you a life without meaning. And no one can live a life that's fulfilled without a sense of meaning. We've been put here for a reason. The question is, why? The answer, I think, is different for every one of us. It's different for me than it is for you, and yet it's the same. Every one of us has been put here. Every one of us is unique and different and special. And I believe our Creator, if I may use the word God, if I may, God has put you here for a reason. The question is, what is it? God does not create things without a purpose. Everything on earth serves a purpose. Why are you here? What are you here to do? What are you here to become, to create, and to give? These are some of the most significant questions that you can answer in your life. And even when you answer them, I'm sure that as your life expands, you'll come up with better answers as you get more experience and you get closer in touch with your own innermost being and maybe closer in touch with your Creator as well. And Tony, where are you going with this? I'm really going to the essence of giving your life what you deserve, which is knowing that there are no mistakes, knowing that every little thing you do has a consequence. It can be a positive consequence if you choose it. The most powerful thing that has consequence in your life, though, is the thing we talk about so often, but I've got to say it again, and that is what's really ultimately shaping our lives, our decisions. The first decision is a decision about what to focus on. Where your focus goes can determine how you think, how you feel, what you do, ultimately what your life turns out like, what you're able to contribute. Bottom line is we must find an empowering focus out of any situation. The second decision that shapes our life and the meaning of our life are the decisions that we make about what something means. Meaning is ultimately something we determine. That's the exciting part about it, and that's the scary part about it. And the third decision, of course, is what are you going to do when something happens? See, so much of the fear that we see in life comes from the fact that most of us don't feel like we're in control. We're running around trying to control all the events of our lives. And every single one of us is going to experience multiple situations in our life, no matter how skillful we are. where we cannot control the event, where it's just not something that we can control because we didn't initiate it. Anytime you're dealing with other people, this is going to happen. Anytime you're dealing with Mother Nature, this is going to happen. Most of us in life are so afraid something's going to happen that we can't control. Therefore, we're going to get pain, and we try to avoid those things we can't control. We try to shape our lives, where we spend our time, who we spend our time with, what we do, by environments that we feel really comfortable in, where we feel like we're really in control of them. What that does is it limits the shape and quality of our lives. We've got to be able to put ourselves out there to discover what we're really capable of when we're put in environments when we don't know what to do, when we don't know what things mean, when we're not sure. It's in those environments that we grow the most. It's in those environments that we discover more of our true purpose as human beings. It's there that our character is shaped. You know, so many times we set goals or we have dreams or we have plans and we work our tail off and it doesn't come out the way we want. And a lot of people come out of those situations disillusioned or angry or resentful or frustrated. They look for someone to blame. You know, sometimes I really truly believe that not getting your goal is part of the design, part of the game plan, causing you to dig inside and discover more of yourself, to really begin to use your real capacity as a human being, those traits that are within you that only expand when they're challenged, when demands are made upon them. Now, I truly believe that God is not so much interested in our convenience as he is in our character. Now, and I also believe that because something hasn't happened right away when you wanted it and designed it didn't work out, doesn't mean it's not going to happen. It's really a test of how committed are you. It's really a test designed to make you become more. God's delays are not God's denials, unless you give up, of course. If you don't do your part, then, of course, whatever you've envisioned will never come to be. But we have to be willing to continue to put ourselves forth and know that events will show up that we can't control. So let me ask you a question. You go, okay, I understand all this, Tony, but how do you ever have a sense of certainty in a world that's changing all the time where you set goals, you do all the right things, and it still doesn't always turn out right? How do you live in a world where suddenly something could happen that could take away your whole business? Or, you know, a storm could come and take away your home? Or some calamity could happen to your personal family? Or a disease could hit? Or someone could die? How do you deal with all that? And the answer is, you have to know the one thing you can control is not events. What you control is what things mean to you. And therein comes the secret to life. Because no matter what happens in your life, the meaning of what has happened is yours. You get to determine it as long as you're conscious. You don't allow the people around you to teach you what to think. And as long as you don't just go on automatic pilot and allow your nervous system to make up connections that are false. Let me give an example of what happens to people. Certainly by now you realize that what you do as a human being is primarily driven by your need to avoid pain and your desire for pleasure, right? But see, all of us have learned through life certain things mean more pain than others. So some people are driven by their fear, right? They experience the emotion of fear is the most incredible, painful thing they could ever imagine, so they'll do anything to avoid being in a fearful situation. Other people are driven by their desire to feel a sense of adventure. Obviously, they make decisions differently. They focus on different things in life. They can walk in the same room as someone who lives in fear, and they're going to notice different things. They're going to want to sit in a different place. They're going to want to try a different kind of vacation than someone who's trying to focus on how to be secure. What drives you? Are you driven by guilt? Are you driven by your past? When we use the word driven, the word drive, it really means to guide, to control, or to direct something. So what's guiding you? What's controlling you? What's directing your behavior? What's directing your focus? What's directing the meaning you're pulling from your life? What is it? Is it your parents? Is it the competition you have with somebody else? Is it wanting to prove somebody wrong? Is it your desire to contribute? Is it your desire for joy or happiness? Or is it a sense of purpose that's driving you? A sense there's something out there for you to do, something you're designed to evolve into, to become, to share, to give, to create. You don't even know what it is. But you're willing to trust that each day more of it's going to come out. Whatever drives you, that's what's shaping your life. And the challenge is that most of us never consciously decide what we're going to have drive our life. See, we're not stimulus response animals, but we can be stimulus response animals. Our nervous systems are designed to help us. They're designed to be a source of decision-making. They're designed to help us very quickly, when we have an experience, figure out what is the source of that pain so we can avoid it in the future. What is that source of that pleasure? We can have more of it in the future. But when we don't think things through, when we don't think things through in an empowering way, when we don't have faith that there's a higher meaning, we tend to settle like animals for the lowest meaning that we can find. Well, this is happening because I'm a bad person. This is happening because there's something wrong with me. This is happening because I'm just destined to fail. or worse. Very often in life, we don't even consciously think things through. Our nervous system just makes quick decisions. Hey, every moment you're alive, whenever you have a significant amount of pain, your brain says, hey, what is the source of this pain? And it uses three criteria, I'm sure you remember, to determine what the source of your pain is. It looks for something that is happening about the same time you're having the pain that is unique. Because after all, you weren't feeling pain a moment ago. You got pain now. What's unique about this situation? It looks for something that is recent, something happening about the same time you have the pain. And it also looks for something that is consistent, something that whenever you've had pain in the past, this has also been a factor in that situation. Let me tell you how these three criteria can help you. You go out one day when you're a child and you touch a hot stove. You feel some pain. You pull it back. Your brain says, okay, what was unique to that moment that gave me the pain? It looks around. It says, ah, this burner, right? It says, what was happening about the same time I felt the pain? I was touching this burner. And what's consistent about it? Well, maybe nothing. So you do it again. After doing it two or three times, or maybe one time because it hurt enough, maybe one time is consistent. Like when somebody says, you always do that. I don't always do that. Yes, you do. You always do it. I've done it one time. Yeah, but, well, that's always. But human beings can make one time consistent if it's painful enough. So the bottom line is, what do you learn? Your nervous system learns you don't grab burners. Right? You just don't do that. And so in the future, when you're trying to make a decision about what to focus on, what things mean, what to do, and you're going by a burner, one of the options is not to go grab that baby just for fun. So as basic as this lesson is, we fail to realize that this simple system that assists us so much in making decisions because it helps us discover what is the source of our pain or our pleasure so we can avoid the pain, gain the pleasure in the future. This simple system can be misguided or misinterpret information. See, here's how it works. I'll give you an example. I was doing a date with Destiny only a couple weekends ago, and several people were having major challenges in their life. One lady just couldn't get herself to really have any meaning in her life. And I kept digging. The real problem that she had is she felt lonely because she felt disconnected because she wanted to have someone she could share her life with. But she couldn't get herself to do that. Why would you guess someone couldn't get themselves to be able to share their life? Not hard to figure out, is it? Pain. The person, obviously, as I guessed, had a painful relationship in the past, which she had. It was so painful that she linked up in her head that marriage, she had a previous one that was painful, equaled death. I'm not going to kind of keep you away from getting too close to a relationship, right? How did her brain do that? Well, she said she was in this relationship that was so great that after they got married, this man became physically abusive, verbally abusive. He basically did everything he could to control every aspect of her life. And the worst thing of all, when she finally got up and developed the courage to divorce this man, he threatened not only her life, but he also threatened their own son's life. And when that happened, she got linked up. Marriage equals death, and not only me, but potential loss of the life of my child. That's even more than the loss of her own life for her. Well, it's not so hard to figure out that if your brain says, why am I feeling this ultimate pain, and it looks for something unique and says, well, because I'm married, and then it looks around and says, what was happening about the same time about the pain, marriage, and you say, what was consistent during the pain, you go, marriage, pretty soon you're going to avoid marriage, but it doesn't stop there. Her brain also linked up that the cause of her pain was something else too, men. And after all, what was unique? I had this man around. I was married to a man. Right? And then secondly, what else is going on? Well, about the same time I was feeling the pain, I was with this man. And sure enough, what was recent? This man. Right about the time I had the pain, he was there every time. So sure enough, all of a sudden she's avoiding all men. It didn't stop there. She also linked up that the reason she felt this pain was because she trusted. So as a result, her brain linked up unconsciously, if you trust, then you will die. Now, I would say to you the opposite is true. If you don't trust, if you don't have faith, you instantly die internally. You may not die physically, but you die emotionally. Because anything that's worth living in life requires faith. It requires trusting. It requires knowing that you can get out of the chair and walk on this floor, and when you step out on the floor, you don't stop and have to analyze, can I do this? And you don't weigh everything and think about your weight and the structure of the floor and what's underneath it. You just trust. Otherwise, you'd be immobilized. You have to trust to drive a car, faith to enter a relationship. You have to faith to start a business. You have to faith when all of a sudden somebody at this company says these 35,000 people are gone. You have to faith, if you're one of those 35,000, that there is a better plan for you and that you will now act on that faith and take action and find that better plan, that better solution for your life. You must have that. You lose trust. You lose meaning. When you lose meaning, you lose your life. Again, maybe not physically, but certainly emotionally. And when you lose it emotionally, the physical loss of life often is not that far behind. Medical researchers are now proving The mind-body connection is not some psychobabble, but a physical reality. That the way we think and the way we feel about our lives affects us physically. In fact, Dr. Chopra recently shared with me that there is a new study that was done in the state of Massachusetts where they began to study what causes someone to die of their first heart attack before the age of 50, but they never get another chance. And what was the number one risk factor they wanted to know? And they assumed that what would cause someone to die from just their very first heart attack and never get another chance would be a person just had so much cholesterol in their body wasn't able to recover. They found out that was not the number one risk factor. And I thought, well, maybe they had diabetes. Maybe it was more of a genetic factor. They once again disproved that theory. What the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare for the state of Massachusetts states in their article clearly is the most important risk factor to determine that you will die of your first heart attack and not get a second chance is what they call job dissatisfaction. You've got to have a deeper meaning for your life than, oh, I'm on that grindstone again, or I'm on that treadmill. No wonder most people like turn to alcohol or drugs or television, and even then they can't find something to entertain themselves. Even then they don't sense any fulfillment because distraction does not create a life of significance. Distraction does not create joy. Distraction will not give you what you're seeking. Drugs will not change your life for the better. Right? What they'll do is hurt you. They'll create pain. And there are all kinds of drugs. Anything that doesn't expand you as a human being or allow you to share more love and joy with others in a natural way that enhances your physiology and your mind and your emotions and your spirit is something you probably don't need. You got to grow. You got to expand. You got to contribute. You got to know that you're here for a purpose. There are no mistakes. There is a meaning. Even if you haven't found it yet, you must discover it. You know what? For most people, they don't discover the meaning of their life until their life is over. What a sad place to be. Or until they have a life-threatening illness. Or until somebody very close to them that they love is about to leave them. You don't have to wait for the pain to discover the meaning. So how do I know when I found the purpose of my life? You decide what it is. You discover it and you decide, this is it. Maybe later on I'll refine it. I probably will. But for right now, this is why I'm playing the game of life. This is what it's about. Every day, if I'm just being this way, if I'm just doing these kinds of simple things with other people, with myself, and I know I'm on track, I know there's a reason for my existence. We all have that. I know, you know, the story of Viktor Frankl, right? The man who wrote Man's Search for Meaning. There's a man who's in a Nazi concentration camp with pain everywhere around him, knowing at any moment he could be gassed or maybe spared. And if he's spared, he has the unique privilege of going out and taking the dead bodies out of those gas chambers, putting them in the big ovens. Talk about intense. And yet somehow in the midst of that pain, he found a deeper meaning. The meaning was that even though he was in pain in the moment, somehow, someday, he would survive this, and he would come to share the story so that this would never happen to other people in the future. He couldn't find a meaning in the moment. He found a meaning in the future. And for most of us, the meaning that we want for our lives is here today, and it's preparing us for an even greater meaning in the future if we'll just use all of our life's experience, the pain and the pleasure, to become more, to prepare ourselves for whatever it is that our Creator has brought us here for, to prepare ourselves so that at the moment of truth when we are needed, we will deliver. And my real belief is we're going to be delivering all along the way. This isn't something that someday you're going to do. It's something you every day are doing. You know, my former spouse, Becky, just recently lost her father. And it's been a tough time for her because in a very short period of time, you're still lost with her mom and her dad. And that's an event you cannot control. And God knows we tried. 3 years ago when they told us that her father had cancer, they told us that he would die within a period of anywhere from 3 to 6 months. And we just did not allow them to tell him that. The obvious reasons, you know, are I believe from all the people we've learned from, everyone from Dr. Bernie Siegel to Norman Cousins, Dr. Deepak Chopra, we understand the mind-body connection. If someone decides that because they have some dis-ease in their body, what it means is they're going to die, then of course they will. And unfortunately, he never found out that diagnosis. And what we did is we kept making sure he had a compelling future, had a sense of meaning, a variety of things that he was needed for. It was amazing how he physically responded. We had trips scheduled for him to go to Fiji on, which he went on, and talked about how we needed his help with our resort there, helping some of the Fijians in the garden because the garden for him created so much meaning in his life, about supporting, about nurturing, about helping life along a little bit. So that he was excited about. Things we wanted him to do with his grandkids. We kept giving him compelling futures, and sure enough, 3 months went by, he was healthy, 6 months went by, he was healthy, a year went by, and through a variety of interventions, pretty soon he seemed to be better, until just recently when we started getting phone calls from his neighbors. He lived up in a place called Rand, Colorado, a little town with 14 people in it. He's been a major part of years and years. And they started calling to tell us that they didn't think he could take care of himself anymore, so go out and brought him back here. The first few days, he was in phenomenal shape. It was like he was completely restored, being around the grandkids and being in the environment. He was all excited to share about things that happened in this little town of Land that he helped to create there, about all about the cab that he helped to deliver, and about the planting season, and how they helped people through the winter, and some of the stories they'd been telling. And he was just totally alive. We took him to doctors for a series of tests. They said they wanted to keep him overnight. Next day we called, and I spoke to his main doctor, and he said, it looks like he just has a form of meningitis. So he said, that'll be really easily treatable, and he should be okay. And he said, don't worry. So we're just going to do a series more tests because he's a bit dehydrated. He lives at an altitude of about 11,500 feet. And he's not drinking enough water. And he said, so, you know, we're going to run a couple more tests, he said, next day. But I think he'll be fine. He said, I have to go out of town. He said, my partner doctor will be working with him. So I passed on all the information. You can check in with him tomorrow. Well, the next day, I came in to go see your dad, and I was out doing a seminar, and I got a phone call, and the phone call was they'd done additional tests, and that they found out that the cancer had spread throughout his spine and into his brain, and while it wasn't treatable before, when they told us 2 years ago, it's certainly not treatable now, and they thought he would die within weeks. The worst part was, though, that they also told us to him before they told us. So he had no one there to support him through the process or to give him other options. When I found this out, I became so angry with the doctors because I focused on how he violated what we asked him to do and how the other doctors should have told his partner doctor not to tell him yet, to allow us to talk to him, to prepare him for the situation. It was so harsh. It was so unfair. And the meaning of it was that it was going to really harm him, that all of a sudden he would give up hope. And what I wanted to do was lash out. Unfortunately, I didn't lash out. Instead, I started focusing on what's happening to people. What can I do? So I went to go see him and talk to him, and it was unbelievable. He looked like he just aged 10 years in a day. Because what had happened is he had no future. There was no purpose in fighting the pain or trying to make things happen or trying to tell stories or do anything. Because after all, you're going to die anyway soon. And that was kind of the way he was interpreting it. Turned up, no matter what we said, he just didn't seem to respond. He just seemed to go into a total stupor. For the next day and a half or so, he just sat in a corner. And he really didn't say very much or communicate very much. He just didn't have to bother with him that he was fine. He didn't open up emotionally. I just sat down with him, and I cried, and I told him how much I loved him and how much Becky loved him and how he needed to share with us what he was really feeling, because holding that back wasn't protecting us from pain. We just felt separate from him. And we could choose what this was going to mean for his life. The doctors had told us 3 years ago that he was going to die within a matter of months then. Here I was, 3 years later. I said, what if you would have just sat around for 3 years in this little corner doing nothing because you thought you were going to die any day or any week? I said, that'd be pretty crazy, huh? And he started to laugh. I said, look at this. I said, you can't just sit off in this corner. Hey, you might die tomorrow. You might die in 6 weeks. You might die in 6 months. You might die in 6 years. You might die in 10 or 20 years and really screw these people's brains up. I said, it doesn't matter how long you're going to live. What's going to matter is how you're going to live while you're here. I said, you've lived an incredible life. In World War II, you were a pilot, You were a businessman. Now you're this guy who's touching this whole town up in Colorado where everybody knows you and cares about you and loves you because you love them. I said, you've raised these incredible kids. I said, now if you're going to go out in style. Go out because you've decided to go out in an energy that you want to, where you really enjoy your life. Don't just shut down because somebody told your life over because you buy into it. Don't do it. And he said, well, Tony, the truth is, I'm not afraid to die. He said, everything you said is true. He said, my life has been so rich. He said, I feel like, I've lived my purpose now. I look around and I see my kids and I see what they're like and I see what I've done and I think maybe it's time for me to go now. I said, listen, if you're deciding to do that because you really want to go, then, I love you. I mean, but, I'm going to cry and I'm not going to try and keep you here. I'm not as bad as we love you. But at the same time, don't leave because somebody tells you it's time to go. Well, I don't know. But when it's time to go, you'll know. But you can go consciously. You can decide when it's time not to wait for the pain of something that's ended. At the same time, don't go any quicker than your meaning is done. I think right now you're teaching your family a lot of new lessons. What do you want to do? How do you want to do things? Let's get your penny out of here. Let's get it out. We have this great conversation. We talk about all kinds of things. I don't bore you with the details. I let him know that he never worried about his daughter and that he can become the kind of person he could always be proud of. It was amazing because the next 4 or 5 days, he came to life. All of a sudden, there was a purpose. And all of a sudden, he was alive. Drop by the pool and tell stories and so forth. And he went over to the polo grounds and did all kinds of just really great things. And then I went away for a seminar, and I came back 2 days later, and it was like he was gone. Barely even talk. Having a difficult time bringing himself up to have round-the-clock care for him. Pretty soon, wasn't able to carry on a conversation. He would start talking gibberish, start seeing things that's invisible and pointless. How the end was coming. The end started to come. There was more and more pain and tears. And we felt it all. And I also, at the same time, reminded ourselves, hey, we're making this thing that's lost because of our short-term thinking about the man and his body and his presence. Life live on beyond physical. For him, what it probably means is freedom. Really be free of the painful body he's been in for many years. And it's just to be with his wife, his mom, just to be with his loved ones. There was another meaning that could give you joy at the same time, like pain. So you try to focus on that love. And one night I got home, and all of a sudden I was told by the nurse, told me that he had passed away. I and I talk. And time she felt incredible. Amazing how instantly how we felt the change just by changing what we focused on. Our loss. It was really a joy for him to be. Couldn't control the event, but we direct our own minds beyond ourselves. I got back yesterday from down in Rand, Colorado. Town I'd never been to before, but I've been there many times. Got a chance to see where to live. In fact, he had. He didn't really want a funeral. He never liked people who put on airs for anything. He was a simple man, simple values, a simple mission. When I got there, I looked around and he never explicitly said what the mission of his life was, the purpose of his life. In a town of 14 people, and we went out to the space site, put his body into the ground, and suddenly person after person started showing up. We knew all 14 people would be there because we knew he touched them all. We all loved him. He was a storyteller. A man who took an old car years ago and painted it black and white, the star on the side, and put a dome in the inside glass and made it look like a police car. So the people came running through this little town, which consists of about 7 or 8 buildings, that they might slow down. His house is called the Rand Yacht Club because he invited everybody up for coffee every single morning, at least 3 or 4 days a year. Yeah, I could tell him a story and cheer him up. He started a little restaurant there called the Liar's Lair. The reason was because he'd tell people stories and he'd tell the wildest tales and get people to believe them. Sure enough, after about 10 or 15 years, he began to realize that some of these things were stories. And they all laughed as they told me stories about this incredible man who touched their lives. When we got to the grave site, not only did 14 people show up, but this little town, 4 hours outside of Denver, people came from all over. People came from Wyoming. People came from Denver. Pretty soon there were 100 people at a grave site that are not supposed to be a service to honor a man who touched their lives. So we said, no, we don't have any formal service because that's not what we wanted. But so we put his body in the ground and then we're like, say anything. I'll talk about how he touched how their life was greater because such a loving soul. I smile at that. I have stories about that. Just his manner, that he was a lover of people and animals. Because he'd been in this town, their lives would never be the same. People would come through the town just for a day. It's a little kindness. He was a man who said, if you can't say something nice about something, don't say anything at all. He never said a negative word about anybody. In fact, one man, probably the most telling tale of this man's life, he was the kind of guy who sat down one day with him and said, what are you doing about all those rodents stealing all our animals? Are you poisoning them? Or are you shooting them? Are you trapping them? Are you killing them? What are you doing? Because they're taking all my stuff. And people said, no, he said, I just met twice a month. What a life. What a man. His life was his mission. His mission was real simple. Love people, love animals, love beings. Make the world a little bit better by just being nice. Live a life of significance. One that had meaning. Didn't go out and change everything on earth. Didn't make $1 billion. Doesn't have people writing him up everywhere. Changed lives. And he died in his sleep out of pain that he decided to tell. He created in his family a greater sense of courage to look at life in a new way and a greater sense of dedication to the power. Added to our tribe. Added to our commitment. Givers of life. As he was a peaceful, red culture from across his path. I hope it also makes you think about what the most important thing in your life. I remember an interview with Michael Landon in Life magazine when he knew he was going to go. Somebody should tell us right at the start of our lives that we're dying. And we might live life to the limit. Every minute of every day, do what I say. Whatever you want to do, do it now. There are only so many tomorrows. You and I are going to live our lives fully, and maybe sometimes take experience of those around us and learn from them. We can learn that all of our lives were either warnings or examples. His life was an incredible example. He didn't think anything in life was insignificant. Not a rodent, not a flower, not an animal, not a stranger passing through. He lived by a philosophy that they also live in Fiji. By the way, Fiji was his favorite place. The last thing he told me was that the happiest time of his life the last years was Fiji. Maybe because he felt like there everybody understood what he understood. Life is meant to be a happy, to be a joy, to appreciate the little things as well as the big things. Appreciate one another, be givers, lovers of life. I say to you that if you're driven by anything other than your love, your spirit, your desire to contribute, desire to grow and expand, you're driven by your need to please others, you're driven by your fear, driven by your past, maybe it's time to free yourself. And the way to do it is decide. Decide consciously what you want your life to be about. Decide consciously what the purpose of your life is. Something simple. Something you can live every single day. Now, I think that when I look at people's lives and I see the people who are having so much difficulty, I think the number one reason why people fail to experience joy in life, experience life as a win, not because their life isn't the win, because the win can be just reaching out and touching somebody around you. The win can be just telling somebody you love them. The win can be taking care of your body, God's temple. The win can be stopping and feeling grateful. The win can be anywhere. You don't have to land on the moon to have the win, and you can enjoy landing on the moon too. How much better to enjoy the process? Because we're going to spend most of our life in process toward the achievement of goals. And I'm not saying don't go do things, and I'm not saying don't have grand things and dreams, and I'm not saying don't do those. But our lives are better because people dream huge dreams and they make them happen. I'm saying don't do it at the expense of not appreciating what's true along the way. And the Cecil's reminder of is all those little things that are so, so important. We've always believed they're important. I feel like we've always lived that they're important, but I just want to redouble the effort. Part of my commitment to him. And I so, in his honor, I challenge you to do the same. I challenge you to hold yourself to a higher standard. I challenge you to realize that you're here for a purpose. Something for you to do and be here for yourself and for others. You can't just do for others and not do for yourself or you won't be here. So this is really designed to get you to ask yourself, are you being efficient? Are you being effective in your life? There's a big difference. If you're being efficient, then what you're doing is you're doing things right. But if you're being effective, you're doing the right things. Are you doing the things that are going to give you the most joy in your life? Why are you doing what you're doing? Where is it taking you? Now, we all need to have what I call a code of conduct, a set of standards we hold ourselves to every day about how we're going to be as people, the kinds of states we're going to live in, Because it's out of those states that we affect everyone around us. Just stop and think about what's most important. Think about why you're here. What's the purpose of your life? Step out of the moment and into eternity. Think about what's eternal when you're feeling insecure. Start to realize there is something inside of you that is never ending. There's something inside of you that is unchangeable. And that's the part of you that knows what is right, what to do, and why you're here. So, you know, it may sound metaphysical, it may sound religious or spiritual, call it whatever you want. But know that the bottom line is that you are here for a reason, and that it's a special reason that only you know. And it may be that you haven't found it because you're looking for something huge. And it may be that you're living it right now, you're just not appreciating your purpose. Maybe what you're doing right now is your life purpose, the thing that you detest most. Or maybe what it is doing is giving you the challenge to really discover something within yourself that allows you to give and be more. Because life is about two things, being and doing. How are you going to be as a human being? We ultimately, our destiny is who do we become as people, and what do? What do you contribute? That's what it's about. That's what gives us a sense of fulfillment. And a life of significance, one of growth and contribution. It's one you decide what your life is about. Simply, what are you here for? Are you here to live, to learn, to grow, to share, to love? What are you here for? I'm asking these questions. I'm hoping you're thinking, not just listening to me. What is the special plan for you? You've got to discover the purpose of your life. There is a plan. There is something here for you that's different than anybody else in the world, and you've got to discover what it is. The best way to discover is just trust your instinct and say, what is it? It was simple, it was clear, and I was living every day. Why am I here? Because if you never discover your purpose, how can you ever win the game of life? How can you really enjoy it thoroughly? I look around at people so often, they're so unhappy, and I think the reason is that they don't ever win the game of life. The game they feel like they can't win, like they're always losing. And the reason number one is, I think there's seven reasons. Let's give you seven. I've jotted some down here. I think number one is, I think most people never win the game of life. They never feel fulfilled. They never feel joy because they don't know the purpose of the game. Because if you don't know the purpose of the game, what's your chances of ever winning? Of ever getting to ring the bell and feel that sense of fulfillment or joy or passion or love or whatever it is that you truly want at the deepest level? If you don't know the purpose of the game, you don't know the goal. It's pretty hard to set up your game to win, isn't it? Pretty soon you start pursuing things that don't give you fulfillment, living somebody else's life other than your own. You've got to know, what are you doing it all for? What do you really want? I ask most people this question, what do you want? They give me answers like, well, I know what I don't want. I don't want to live this way anymore. I don't want to feel like hell anymore. That's not going to give you what you want. What do you really want? Oh, I want to finally be financially secure so I can retire. Great. You know statistics about retirement? Actuary statistics from insurance companies show that 3 years after a man retires, specifically I'm using men, guess what happens? He dies. To retire is to die. And for some people, this is like their major aim. Think about it. Retirement is going to make you happy. You've got to have a purpose. You've got to know what it is. You've got to decide what it is, at least for now, and know that that vision will continue to expand. Second reason why most people fail at the game called life, because even though they don't know the purpose of the game, they've got tons of rules about how it must be played. They don't even know the goal. They've got all these rules they've got to live by. And not only do they have rules for themselves, but they have rules for everybody else around them. Rules for how their spouse should be. Rules about how their boss should be. Rules for how people they don't even know on the street should be. You know, it's so often in life we get upset with other people, and it's not about the other people. It's about our rules. They're doing something we know they shouldn't be doing, or they're not doing something we know they should be doing. Right? We need to just relax a little bit. We need to realize that whatever people are doing, they got a reason. It may not be a very intelligent reason by our perspective, but who are we to say? And you know what? And maybe it isn't an intelligent reason by lots of people's ideas, but you know what? It is a reason. I mean, it all comes down to how we wire ourselves as human beings. Whenever you see somebody and think they're doing something crazy, have some compassion. Are there any stupid things you've ever done in your lifetime or crazy? I would hallucinate based on my own personal experience. The answer may be, you betcha. So the bottom line is, we got to understand that things are going on that we don't understand with people. I remember one time I was talking to Stephen Covey about times when we misinterpreted people's behavior, and he told me about the time when he got on a subway, and this man walked in and brought on a bunch of his kids, and they were just running rampant, screaming, yelling, making noise, creating havoc. You know, Stephen's more of a mellow, centered kind of guy. He doesn't like that kind of environment, even on the subway. And the bottom line is, you know, he didn't want to say anything, but he found himself getting more and more irritated. And the man seemed to be just ignoring the kids, like, you know, it didn't even matter what they were doing. So he found himself finally at the point where he actually spoke up. So Stephen turned to him and said, you know, do you think you might want to do something about these children? And the man looked at him and said, oh, yeah, I guess I should, He said, we just got back from the hospital. The mother just died. Quite honestly, neither do I. He felt like absolute garbage. And it made him from then on realize whatever's going on, there may be something else going on as well. He made him have compassion. Gave him fewer rules for other people in his life. Not a bad idea. But we were talking about people that don't succeed in life, and why don't they succeed? One, they don't know the purpose of the game. Two, they got tons of rules even though they don't have the purpose. How would you like to be in a game? You're trying to win, and you don't know the goal, and you got a zillion rules you got to live by. That'd be pretty frustrating, wouldn't it? Well, add step three to it. Here's the third reason people fail to win the game of life, and that is because their rules are in conflict. We've got all these different special rules where we contradict ourselves, where in one situation you're supposed to be one way, and in another situation you're supposed to be totally different in order to be effective. If you've got a bunch of rules in conflict, which most of us do, you're going to have pain. You're going to have frustrations in your life. This is the fourth reason why most people won't win the game of life. Because even when the person plays by the rules, they don't always win. In other words, you do everything right, you don't always get rewarded. You give your all. You put your heart and soul on the line. You do everything right, and still sometimes it rains on your parade. Sometimes, you know, a storm comes down and beats the death out of your crop. All of a sudden you're in the Midwest, and a flood comes and destroys all you worked on. You know, that kind of messes your brain a little bit. You start saying, hey, you know, why even try? There's no meaning in it. Everything I do is for naught. It's worthless. Not realizing there's a deeper meaning. There's a meaning beyond the moment. That what's happening in this life right now, this event you can't control, whether it's the loss of a father, as Becky has gone through, and a father-in-law as I have, or the loss of a business, or anything that seems to be a loss, is a gain if you ask yourself, how can I use this? What else can this mean? If I can't use it today, how will I use this someday? How can I turn this into opportunity? How can I make myself more? How can I use this pain to sculpt my soul? What can I do right now to move myself forward? These are the kinds of questions that will support you instead of woe is me.
Let me break into this. So here's where I used my pain. I am using my traumatic brain injury as a source of advocacy. I feel whole when I can help. I feel whole when I can share my story and I know that it helps others. Even if it doesn't help, if my story, if my life, if what I've gone through can ease someone's burden, whether it's a family member or a friend or anyone, if my story can make someone more comfortable, or uncomfortable, but more understanding or have more patience with themselves, other survivors, then I've done something very purposeful. So that's how I took my tragedy and turned it into fortune. Not monetary, but in my heart and in my feelings. And in my knowing who I am. That's my take. Okay, let's go back to Tony.
Why me? Why does this have to happen? You'll never get an answer to those. Those questions will leave you in an endless loop. Here's the fifth reason why most people fail in the game called life. Sometimes you break the rules and you win. Oh my gosh, you do something you know isn't right. You do something you know you shouldn't do. Something that's against your own values, against your own way of doing things, and you get pleasure. And your brain goes, hey, maybe there's some new rules out here. Maybe I don't have to live by these rules. After all, when I worked my butt off and did everything right and held myself to high standard, I got pain, I break the rule, and I got pleasure. Maybe this house really wired. Maybe I ought to just, like, take a look at life being this way. You know what it does? It takes you away from your higher purpose. It takes you away from what's most important in your life. And while you might get pleasure in the short term, you give up that sense of dignity within yourself that says you're doing the right thing. That's what causes more people to fail in life than I think almost anything else. Because the ultimate pleasure in life requires sometimes short-term pain to get to it. And that ultimate pleasure is who you become, what you contribute, and the experience of life that you have because of that growth and contribution. The sixth reason why most people fail the game called life is because in order to win this game, you got to work with 5.5 billion other people who all have the wrong rules. They don't know the purpose of the game either, and they are real clear that there are certain rules you must live by. We all have different rules because we've all learned different ways of getting out of pain and into pleasure in life. Got to learn from one another. And finally, the seventh reason why most people fail the game called life is because they think it's a life and death game. And you say, well, it is a life and death game. Well, I'm the first person to agree that this is not a practice session. This is the real thing. That's why I got to live it full on. But if you think everything is life and death every moment, you put so much pressure on yourself that you truly will not live life. You live in fear, and that's no life at all. How do you live life and win the game? Well, in spite of all this stuff that sounds so terrible, there are people that seem to be winning, seem to be fulfilled, seem to be making a difference, seem to have a great deal of joy in their life. And they seem to have it consistently, and they're not doing it through drugs or alcohol or distraction. They're doing it through living a life of significance. How have they done it? They do what we do in our Date with Destiny seminar. We accomplish seven things in that seminar. I bring it up because I hope you'll take the time to actually come. Well, we'll get your purpose and your mission statement and your values all in the exact order you ideally need them to be. So you're being pulled in the direction you want. So they're being pulled in multiple directions. But for right now, here's what we do. This is what we're going to start doing on this tape. Is the first thing these people have to succeed or fulfill is they've decided what the purpose of the game is, at least for right now. You follow me on this? They said, okay, I don't know what the purpose is ultimately, but let me just decide. For right now, the purpose of my life is to what? The love and be loved is to grow, is to expand, is to make a difference, do this, do that. They come up with a purpose, which is what I want you to do at the end of this tape. The start. I know it's not the end all and be all from one tape, but I want to get you started on a mission statement, a purpose statement for your life. You got to have that. If you don't at least have a target, if you don't know what the goal of the game is, you don't know what to decide to do. We have all these choices, all these opportunities. So you don't have to choose between something that's good and bad. You have to choose between something that's good and something that's great. But if you don't know what your purpose is, if you don't know what you value most in life, you can't make an easy decision. All decision-making is value clarification. If you don't know where you're going, then you can get there by any road. You're not going to know the difference. You know, everything looks like great opportunity. One of the biggest challenges in life is choosing, focusing your life, deciding what to spend your time on, what to spend your energy on. Having a clear purpose allows you to do that. The second thing you want to do to make your life work, and those who succeed do this, they have fewer rules. The more rules you have about how people have to be and how life has to be for you to be happy, the less happy you're going to be. The happiest people, those people say, you know, every day above ground is a great day. The happiest people are people who find joy in a smile, joy in adventure, joy in a simple action. If you can find joy in that area, then all the big things are just a big bonus for you in your life. So when you find yourself starting to react to something that someone else has done, and you might want to ask yourself, how significant is this really, right? Is this so bad? Is it okay for this person to have a different opinion, a different view, a different feeling than me in this area? In most cases, you might say, yeah, it is. What would you have to believe in order to be upset that everybody has to live by your rules? Well, maybe in some areas that's real important. Maybe some other areas it's not as significant. You can just let go of it and have a lot less pain. The third thing that people who win the game of life seem to have in common is they've made their rules consistent. They found the conflicts in their life, and when they find them, they've been honest with themselves and say, this is a total contradiction of what I normally believe in other areas. No more. This is not how I'm going to live my life. Fourth thing these people do that make them succeed is they give themselves pleasure whenever they win, even when the world doesn't. This is really important. You got to realize that sometimes you'll do everything right and you won't get acknowledged. So what? Acknowledge yourself. You got to catch yourself doing little things right and give yourself the pleasure you deserve. After all, if somebody else tells you, hey, great job, and that makes you feel good, it's not them saying great job that makes you feel good. It's when they say great job, you stop and say, oh, that means I get to feel good, and you send a little neurotransmitter that allows yourself to feel the pleasure feeling in your body. Why not just give it to yourself so that you keep yourself on track so you're always reinforcing good behaviors, excellent behaviors, commitment to your highest values? Fifth thing these people have in common is when they screw up, when they don't do things right, when they violate their own values, when they violate their own sense of purpose in life, they give themselves a short burst of pain. They say, hey, this is not who I am. I stand for more. They don't wait for the world to have to give them pain. That's why they're on track. Sixth thing that these people that win have in common is that they know that everybody in life has different rules, and so when they get in a relationship with people, they know they've got to have other people in their life to help succeed in a particular area, they try to find out their rules. Because if you know what's most important to people, if you know what their rules for life are, what their musts are in life, it's a lot easier. And lastly, people who succeed in life, they learn that life has a purpose, but they also, at the same time, don't take life too seriously. They don't take themselves too seriously. What's that old funny metaphor? Why do angels fly? Because they take themselves lightly. The bottom line is we've got to look at life in a different way. Now, with all this conversation we've had here about purpose, what are you and I going to do right now so that you have a greater sense of meaning? Well, one is I don't need to just go out and create this grandiose purpose and write pages and pages and pages. I think that the simplest things can be the most powerful things. So if you can now, close your eyes and think about what you want to be when you're going to grow up. Go back to a time when you're 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years old. What do you want to be back then? What do you want to do? Who are your role models? And why did you want to be that? Think about it just for a second in your head as I'm saying this. You might want to write a few of these things down. In fact, pretty soon you're definitely going to want to write things down. So it might be good to stop the tape right here and just think about what your purpose is and pull out a piece of paper and a pen or a little computer and let's work together on this for a second. What were some of the things you wanted to be when you were growing up, when you were a little kid? I remember one of the first things I wanted to be was an archaeologist. Now, whatever you wanted to be, here's the question I want to ask you. Why did you want to be that? In other words, what was the feeling you were hoping to get from that? What were the sensations? What were you wanting to be and do? What were you wanting to get from that?
I wanted to be a veterinarian. Why did I want to be a veterinarian? Because I loved animals. I still love animals. And I had strength to be. I so wanted to be a veterinarian when I was a young person. Let's listen to Tony again.
When I think back and I think about what I really want to be as an archaeologist is I want to discover things. I mean, that was the biggest thing. I want to discover things that had not been discovered before, something new, something unique, something different. And I wanted to share that with people. I wanted to be a person who went out and discovered and then shared that discovery with others. And you know what's interesting? I'm doing that today. I'm just not sticking my head in the sand and doing it. I'm doing it by sticking my head in other people's brains and find out what makes them tick and find out what makes me tick and then sharing some of that. But that feeling, that same feeling that I wanted then, I found a way to do it today in a new way. And so I challenge you to think about what was it you really wanted from that. Then think of something else you wanted to be when you were growing up. I wanted to also be a police artist later on. Remember that? You know those guys that draw those pictures, you know, and show people and catch the bad guys? And why did I want to do that? What did I want to get from that? Oh, gosh. Thought about it. Well, I wanted to create. I wanted to be creative, and I wanted to help people. I wanted to help people do the right things. I wanted to get people out of their pain. I wanted to catch the bad guys. But most importantly, I wanted to create and help people. And guess what? I found a way to do that today, different than I originally thought, but the same purpose is there. So maybe it's not the same purpose for you for all the things you want to do. Maybe they have a common thread, or maybe they're different threads that are important. What else did you want to be when you're growing up, and why did you want it? What feelings did you hope it would give you? What did you hope would come from it? Think for a second. And maybe another one of mine while you're thinking, try and trigger you. What else I wanted to do? Well, I wanted to definitely be a rock star. I wanted to be able to entertain people, to change their emotional state, to use my voice and my face and my body to give people more passion in their lives. Now I've found another way to do that.
I wanted to be a hairdresser and a makeup artist. I wanted to help people to be beautiful. I wanted to do their hair and make them beautiful for special occasions or for every day. And I wanted to do their makeup and help them to feel good. And I wanted everyone to be happy. Gosh, you know, when I think about this, what Tony's saying, and it makes so much sense because now what I'm doing is I'm doing everything I can to help my fellow brain injury survivors feel good about themselves, for them to feel beautiful, for you to feel beautiful, to feel happy, to feel beautiful. And when I wanted to be a veterinarian, I wanted the good, happy feelings. I wanted to see the wagon tails, and I wanted to be able to help something that was sick. I wanted to help an animal who was sick and needed help. Something wonderful. I wanted to help a being, a wonderful being, which is kind of like what I want to do now. I want to help someone who is sick or someone who is aching or heartache or mental ache to help them feel better. So it really does work. Tony, makes sense. Let's listen more.
I get to work with some of these people. The other day, I got a chance to go to the Aerosmith concert. I kind of grew up listening to those guys. I found out that Steven Tyler and some of these guys are fans of mine as well. Went backstage, and I met Tim Collins, who's their manager, and he told me a phenomenal story. He said that years ago, in the early 80s, when Aerosmith was in really bad shape, the guys were hooked on heroin, and They were losing everything financially, and the group had broken up. But he decided he was going to turn it around, and he read two books, Think and Grow Rich and a little book called Unlimited Power. And he said that what he learned there gave him the inspiration and some of the tools and strategies to get himself off heroin and coke. And then he did a group intervention and helped the other guys do the same. And these guys are now on a mission. They're totally clean. They're Evian water drinking guys that are out there sharing their rock and roll and their message. They're doing healthfully. I got a chance to meet Steven Tyler. He's just an incredible guy. And these guys have been touring for 23 years, giving their all passionately every day. I feel like they're brothers. And it was really interesting because he said, you know, I watch on TV all the time. I feel like we're walking the same path, you know. And he said, I listen to your tapes. He said, we really have the same mission. He said, you know, do you think you'd get together with us and do a gig for us? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, like, you know, the guys on the weekend. Can you maybe, like, do your gig for us so we can all participate on the weekend? I was going to laugh, and I pinched myself. I said, oh, cool, now I get to do a gig for Aerosmith. I'm not out there rock and rolling, but sort of I am. I'm working with the rock and rollers. So it's fun. So my point is, maybe you're not doing what you originally envisioned, but maybe you'll find a way to do it even better if you have some faith. Maybe if you keep developing yourself and you know at least the emotion you want, the contribution you want to create, you'll find a better way. Most importantly, before you can find a way, you've got to know the essence of what it is you really want. What is that purpose? That's what I'm really asking you about. Now, with your eyes closed again, think about a situation in your life when you felt like you're really on a roll. You know the kind of situation I'm talking about where you just felt incredibly good. You had great feelings, but things were just flowing. Things were effortless. When you thought to yourself, wow, I love this. This is what life's about. I love this. This is it. This is what life is really about. Can you remember a time like that in your life at any age, young or old, where you really felt like you're in that flow? You thought, this is it. This is what life's about. Think of a situation like that right now. Remember that time. Step back into your mind, back into your body like you were then. And look through your own eyes as you were then when you felt like this is what life's about and see what you saw. Hear what you heard. What were you doing? What were you feeling? What were the states you were in? What were you experiencing? Yeah, think about it. And tell me, what is it? And was there anything in common with this with some of the other things you wanted to have in your life, the feelings you
wanted? Excuse me. I realize that a lot of us who are traumatic brain injury survivors are still fairly new since the injury, and a lot of us were injured at such a young age that maybe we don't remember or haven't yet felt these moments that Tony is talking about. I have lived longer as a survivor than I was prior. So I understand this, and I understand these feelings. But those of you who have not gone through these feelings, imagine yourself doing something that you see on TV. You know how you see some things on TV that just look so fun, that just look so happy, like sometimes you see, like I like it when I see commercials of pool parties and stuff, and I see all the people jumping into the pool, and you know they have that big wide smile and then that big huge splash. Think about that. Think about yourself being that person with a smile on your face. Think about yourself jumping into that pool. And when you think about that, you have a feeling, and that feeling is the feeling that Tony's talking about right now. Let's go back.
Maybe you wanted to grow or create or contribute or discover or expand or challenge. What is it? Love. What were the feelings? What were you doing? And when you get a sense of what that was, then think about this. Think of another situation in your life. Think of a second one when you felt like you were on a roll. At some other point in your life, when things were flowing, and you thought, this is it. This is what life's about. I love this. Think of another time like that and step into that situation as well. Step into it right now. As you step in that situation, look around, see what you saw then, hear what you heard then, feel what you were feeling then. What was happening in that moment? Not just what you were doing. Notice what you were doing. Were you creating or writing or speaking or communicating or manufacturing something or studying or learning? What were you doing? But also, how were you feeling? What were the states you were in?
Here's something from my life. Here's what I was doing. I have two dogs, and one is close to 20 and one is close to 10. And both dogs have had years of training. And when I reveled in the training and when I was so excited after weeks of trying to train my dogs, you know, sit and come and stay and roll over and say everything nice to your dog and don't say the word no and do it this way and oh, so pressure. And when I felt so good, when I was so happy with myself and the world, when my dogs followed me, when they could walk beside me like they're supposed to, when they sat when they were supposed to, when they rolled over when they're supposed to, when I felt like I did what I was supposed to do, when I learned how to be a good dog trainer, that's when I felt like Tony's talking.
And what were you doing for others if they were involved, other people involved? What was the process? How were you being and what were you doing? Feel in your body. Is there anything that's similar between this and the last experience? Or anything about this that's similar between this and the feelings that you wanted from those things you wanted to be when you were going to grow up? That's it. Notice it and capture not only the idea of this, but the feeling as well. Now, one more time. Think of something else. Another time at any age when you felt like you were on a major roll. Things were really flowing, where you felt incredible. And you felt like, I love this. This is what life's really about. This is it. Think of another situation like that right now. As you step into that situation right now, notice, what were you doing?
Here, I got it. Here's that situation for me. After I went back to college, after the injury, and I got my assistant degree in occupational therapy, there were times I worked that way for 20 years with geriatrics, and there were a few times when I had this connection with a client or a patient of mine, and I was able to teach them how to tie their shoe, even though they were 60 years old and they had a stroke and they had forgotten, and they were able to tie their shoe, and they were so happy. Or I was I worked oftentimes with stroke. Victims who were unable to hold their spoon and unable to bring food to their mouth. And when I worked with them to do that, and when they were able to do that and not spill their food and not spill their food on their clothes and able to eat and have dignity, and oh, that was so exciting. And yes, it's all wrapped up just like Tony said. I didn't premeditate all these things that I'm saying. It's just I like Tony Robbins.
What were you creating? What were you sharing? What were you feeling? Feeling these feelings. Think about the purpose of your life. If you were going to say it in a simple phrase, not even paragraphs and paragraphs, simple phrase or a sentence or two, and you're going to write down the purpose of my life is to what? If you're going to do it, you're going to have a couple simple criteria. One has got to be stated positive. Not the purpose of my life is to stop all the horrible things in the world. No, something positive. Let me state it in the positive. And if it was going to be something brief, and if it was going to be something emotionally charged in terms of its words for you, it has to have how you're going to be as a person and what are you going to do. And it's got to include not just other people, like I'm going to change other people's lives or I'm going to make the world better for other people. You've got to be in your own mission statement. You've got to be your own purpose statement. You've got to be in there too and other people. Don't have a purpose in mind just for me to be happy because we're all connected. So if it's you and others, being and doing, brief and short, what is the purpose of your life? What is it? Right now, what comes out of your head? Not the right answer, not the perfect answer, just the answer, the purpose of your life.
All right. Purpose of my life is to share happiness, to be able to walk hand in hand with others who have gone through such tragedies and share a sense of independence, a sense of pride or confidence in myself. My purpose in life is to be able to walk hand in hand with other brain injury survivors and for us to feel confidence in ourselves.
Just to be and do what for yourself and others. Just say it out loud. Just say it. Don't even write down it first. If you got pen and paper, then write it down. Purpose of my life is to what? Say it again. Try something. Keep changing it. And if you write it down each time, it'll give you better. So I prefer if you wrote it down. But just come up with something. The purpose of my life, for me, Tony Robbins, is to serve God and my fellow man by being a powerful, loving, passionate, outrageous, courageous, strong, playful, crazy example of the unlimited possibilities that God gives when you commit your life to service, when you really focus on contribution, that's what my life's about. I know what I feel. I can change the words slightly here and there, but I know the essence of my life. And you've got to know what that is for you. That is what will help you to make the decisions. That will give you the motivation to get up early and stay up late. That will make you connect with people in a way you've never connected before, but you've got to know what it is. There's got to be more than just you. You and others got to be brief. It's got to be emotional. It's got to be intense. So go do it right now. Turn off the tape and just start writing like crazy. What is the purpose of your life? And when you write something, write another thing. Cross it out, write another one. Keep writing it better and better until you got something you like, and then turn the tape back on. Go for it. Do it now. The purpose of your life is to what? You did turn the tape off, didn't you? You're not just sitting there thinking. Come on, if you write it out, it'll be better with more precision. Turn it off.
If you're on your way back, then just ignore the last sentence.
I didn't turn it off. I'm on my way back. I did write it down.
I hope so. I know it's not the end all be all. It better not be perfect, or I'm going to come to the tape and grab you. Your job is not to be perfect. It's to be excellent. Perfection can never really be achieved anyway. If you're truly a perfectionist, then it's never perfect. But it's getting better all the time. So what is the purpose of your life? And how does it feel when you think about this is the purpose of my life? Now let me give you one other criteria. Did you write it so you can only achieve it once you die? If so, change it. Because we don't want you to have to die to achieve your purpose, which is what some people have. It should be something you can experience every day. You know, whatever you do, whether you're just sitting at the lunch counter, walking through a grocery store, you're going and conducting your business, I don't care what it is. It should be something you can feel. And you got to find what that is for you. How to language that, at least for now, so you know the goal of the game. With that, your life takes on a whole other dimension. So as you go out over the next month, try something. Take this purpose statement and keep it in front of you. Put it in the system you use for managing your time and keeping your to-do list. Put it up on the wall nearby. And as you look at it each day, don't just write it and forget about it. Think about it each day. How can I live my purpose more? And when you go to make a decision about doing something and you're not sure why you're doing it, you can always go back to your purpose. You can do it going into a meeting. You don't know why you're going to the meeting? Ah, I'm going to the meeting. I'm going to be powerful, loving, passionate, outrageous, playful. I'm going to inspire people to see what's possible if we really serve all the people around us. That's not hard to figure out. You have a guiding principle. No matter what happens, principles don't change. The essence of who you are will not change. The environment may change. The vehicles may change. But what's inside of you won't. Let me say one final thing to you before I send you off and have you take some more time to work on your mission statement. One is that if you want to send me your mission statement to Robin's Research, I'd love to receive it. I'd love to see how you've languaged the purpose of your life. So if you feel like doing that, please do and address it to me personally. The other thing is this. I want you to realize that very often, not getting your dream gives you your destiny. What I mean by that is this. So often, as I said, when we start this tape, people set up a goal or a game, and they don't get it, and then they feel so disappointed, so frustrated, sometimes resentful towards others or to their creator or towards themselves for not accomplishing or achieving it. But the truth of the matter is, whenever something happens, you must find an empowering meaning. You must ask yourself, how can I use this? If this was to serve a higher purpose in my life, how would I use it to serve a higher purpose? If this was going to make me into somebody more, how would I use it to make me more? And very often in life, if you really look back on your life, the worst situations in your life have been the best. If you were willing to trust that it happened for a reason, that somehow, even though this is painful and you'd never want it to happen again, somehow this is going to serve you. Maybe you were hurt by someone or some situation, but because of that, your kids will never be hurt the same way you did when you were a child. Or maybe you went through some tough time, but because of that, you'll be able to help somebody else, so they won't have to go through the same pain you did. Maybe the pain made you make a new decision and send you in a brand new direction that brought you to this destiny. I really, truly believe in my heart of hearts that if we're willing to trust and have faith and look for answers and actively pursue them, that every human experience supports us, even those that are painful. And I believe we can probably do them without the pain, but if the pain does strike or if something happens outside your control, which it will, instead of living in fear that that'll happen someday, you want to live from the sense of certainty that says, no matter what happens, I will benefit from it because I will look for benefits and therefore I will find them. That's simple. Now, I'll give you a good metaphor. Now, there's a great movie, I'm sure you recall, it was called Field of Dreams. In it, they said, if you build it, they will come. In the movie, Kevin Costner seeks out an old man by the name of Doc Graham, played by Burt Lancaster. And when he first meets this man, going to see him to tell him about a field of dreams that Kevin has developed, a place where these old men could come back and play again, be young again, to live their dream. And when he meets Doc Graham, he starts to talk to him, and he says, I understand that you only were able to play one inning in your life. Because our grand said, well, yeah, my whole life's dream was always to play baseball, to be a professional. He said, every single day I gave my all. I lived this passion. He said, you know, I took ground balls and batting practice, and I pushed myself. And he said, finally, I made it. I made it to the big leagues. And the whole season went by without my being able to play. And finally, at the end of the season, in the eighth inning, the coach looked over at me and said, kid, I want you in right field. He said, I was so happy. I couldn't believe it. I ran out onto the field. He said, I stood out there in right field waiting for somebody to hit it to me, waiting for my chance. And nothing happened. And when we came back in, he said, my turn to bat never came. And the next year, they, without giving me another chance or even giving me a chance, he sent me back to the minor leagues. He said, I just couldn't take it. I couldn't take going through that again, so I quit. And Kevin Costner said, oh, my God, that's unbelievable. What incredible pain. What devastation. That must have destroyed you. I mean, for any man to be that close to his dream and have your dream pass you by as if it doesn't even know it's you. He said, that must have been the most destructive, painful thing. That's a total disaster. And my gram said, no, son. He said, playing baseball for only 5 minutes was not a disaster. Playing baseball for only 5 minutes was not devastating. What would have been a disaster? What would have been devastating is if I'd only been a doctor for 5 minutes. You see, if I would have hit that baseball, that might have been the bigger disaster, because then I never would have come to this town. I never would have saved this man's life, delivered that little girl. Got to know the people, and now I'm my best friend in the world. And that would have been a disaster. In other words.
Oh, no. I lost it. I'll get it back. But let me break in here. That's so powerful. First of all, A Field of Dreams is a great movie. I suggest that you rent it or find it somewhere. It's a great movie. And if you're not a baseball person, it's just a real feel-good, emotional movie. But along with that, here's where I get my take. As you know, I'm a traumatic brain injury survivor. And after I got myself back together and learned how to read and write and do everything again, I went back to college, and I became an occupational therapy assistant. And after I was an occupational therapy assistant for about 5 years, which now it's been over 20, but for about 5 years, I was so happy to be able to be doing that occupation, and that's something I really, really never, ever wanted to do or thought about prior to having a traumatic brain injury. So I have told people, gosh, I think I'm happier today because I'm a traumatic brain injury survivor. So, you know, I guess it's how you work with it and how I worked with it and how I made my life move forward. We've all got problems, devastations, and mountains to climb, but you got to take what you got to take and do what you got to do. I am so pleased. I am so happy that I was able to take my devastation and turn it into my happiness. I just love this Anthony Robbins, this Tony Robbins. I'm going to, this was from a YouTube video, and when I went to break in, I stopped this tape, so let me see what I can get here for a minute or two. Ugh. So what I'm doing is I am on my computer and seeing what I can do and how I can pull up Tony Robbins again. Here's, is that the one we were listening to? I'm seeing it. But I'm trying to figure out which one we were listening to. Let me see. There are so many. So if you have access to YouTube, go for it. And all you need to do is type in Anthony Robbins or Tony Robbins, and he's got just millions and maybe hundreds of free YouTube videos that you can listen to audio or you can listen and see. He's a very motivational, positive speaker. You know, some things really tug at my heartstrings and some things just ring so clear for me. And other things don't. They make sense to me, but they don't ring real clear to my world and to my life. I've listened to Tony over and over again for many, many years, and I'll listen to the same subject and topic that he's saying, and I'll listen to it many, many, many times. And after listening to it for a couple times or once or twice or three or five or ten, it helps me see things more clearly. It helps me work on my life. He's not telling people to live like he is. He's trying to give people ideas of what to do to make their life better. I can't find the one that we were listening to, and we still have about 10 more minutes that I can run. So how about we listen to another Anthony Robbins? Here's part of his audiobook, Awakening the Giant Within. Let's see how this goes.
I'm Shannon Wendt. I'm from Grand Rapids, Michigan.
Okay, we got to listen to this little ad for a second. There, now it's gone. And
life is either a daring adventure or nothing. Helen Keller. I am not discouraged because every wrong attempt discarded is another step forward. Thomas Edison.
These are quotes from the book of Anthony Robbins.
Powers that would astonish him, that he never dreamed of possessing. Forces that would revolutionize his life if aroused and put into action. Orison Swett Marden.
Hi, this is Anthony Robbins. I want to take a moment before we get started just to thank you for the privilege and the opportunity to share with you the strategies and techniques that positively shape my life. I really respect you as the kind of person who really wants to change the quality of your life and you're committed to do something about it. I really believe that we all have dreams. We all want to believe deep down in our souls that we have a special gift, that we can make a difference, that we can somehow touch other people in a special way, and that we can make the world a better place. I think at one time in our lives, we all had a vision for the quality of life that we desire and that we deserve. Yet for most people, those dreams have become so shrouded in the frustrations and the routine of the daily life that they no longer even make an effort to accomplish them. For far too many, the dream has dissipated, and with it, so has the will to shape our destinies. Many of us have lost the sense of certainty that creates the winner's edge. My life's quest, I have to tell you, has been really to restore that dream and to make it real, and to give you unlimited power. This tape will begin to introduce you to those principles, and I can promise you, if you listen to it and you'll apply it, together we can start making measurable progress. Welcome to Awaken the Giant Within with Anthony Robbins. You're about to learn techniques that can help you create, live, and enjoy the life you've always dreamed of. In this program, you're going to learn a series of simple and specific strategies for addressing the cause of any challenge in your life and changing it with the least amount of effort. You're going to learn how to destroy the blocks and break down the walls that have been holding you back. You're going to learn the incredible power of decisions, belief systems, and associations, and how you can begin to use these powers to get what you really want, starting right now. Most of all, you'll learn what Anthony Robbins has taught thousands of people who have used these techniques to awaken the giant within. And if you have the power to understand how your mind, your body, and your emotions work, because of this, you can control your own destiny. Know who you are, know what you want, and know how to get it, starting now. I know I'll never forget the day that it really hit me that I was truly living my dream. I was flying my jet helicopter from a business meeting in Los Angeles, traveling to Orange County on the way to one of my seminars. And as I flew over the city of Glendale, California, I suddenly recognized a large building. And I stopped the helicopter and hovered above it. It was kind of a fun thing to do on a helicopter you can't do in a plane. And as I looked down, I realized this is the building that I'd worked in as a janitor a mere 12 years ago. In those days, I've been concerned about whether my 1960 Volkswagen would hang together for a 30-minute trip to work. My life had been focused on how am I going to survive. I felt alone, and I felt fearful. But that day, as I hovered there in the sky, I thought, what a difference a decade can make. I did have a dream back then, but at the time, it seemed like it would never be realized. Today, though, I've really come to believe that all my past failures, all my frustrations were actually just laying the foundation for the understanding that it created the new level of living I now enjoy. As I continued my flight south along the coastal route, I spotted dolphins playing with the surfers and the waves below. It's a special sight that my wife Becky and I treasure as one of life's special gifts. Finally, we reached Irvine, California, and as I began to look below, I was a little disturbed when I saw that the off-ramp to my seminar was jammed with bumper-to-bumper traffic for more than a mile. I thought to myself, boy, I hope, you know, whatever else is going on tonight gets started soon so that people coming to my seminar can arrive on time. But as I started to descend down to the helipad, I began to see a brand new picture, thousands of people being held back by security just where I was about to land. Suddenly, I began to grasp the reality. The traffic jam had been caused by people coming to my event. Although we'd expected only 2,000 people, I was facing a crowd over 7,000 in an auditorium that would only hold 5,000. When I walked into the arena from the landing pad, I was surrounded by hundreds of people who wanted to give me a hug or tell me how my work had possibly impacted their lives. The stories they shared with me were absolutely incredible. I was so touched by the emotions in the room that I got choked up. And after I was introduced at first, I couldn't even speak. And as I looked out on the audience, I saw 5,000 smiling, cheering, loving faces. And at that moment, I realized I am living my dream. What a feeling to know that beyond a shadow of a doubt, I have information and strategies and philosophies and skills that could truly assist any one of these people in empowering themselves to make the change that they desire most. You know, a flood of images and emotions started to flow over me. I began to remember an experience I had only a few years before, sitting there in my 400-square-foot bachelor apartment in Venice, California, all alone and crying. I remember listening to the lyrics of a Neil Diamond song, "I am, I said, to no one there, and no one heard it all, not even the chair. I am, I cried, I am, said I, and I am lost, and I can't even say why, leaving me lonely still." I remember feeling like my life didn't even matter, as if the events of the world were controlling me. I also remember the moment my life changed, the moment I finally said, I've had it. I know I'm much more than I'm demonstrating, mentally, emotionally, physically. I'm more than what my life is showing right now. I made a decision in that moment which was to alter my life forever. I decided to change virtually every aspect of my life. I decided I would never again settle for less than I could be. Who would have guessed that this decision would bring me to such an incredible moment now? I mean, how could a young kid like me with nothing but a high school education have created such dramatic changes? My answer is simple. I learned to harness the principle I now call concentration of power. Most people have no idea the giant capacity we can instantly command when we focus all of our resources on mastering a single area of our lives. Controlled focus is like a laser beam that we can use to break through anything that seems to be stopping us. I'm going to make a couple of assertions that you may find a bit bizarre, maybe even unbelievable. And the first one is, I believe I know who you really are. I believe you and I must be kindred souls. Your desire to expand has brought you to this program, and that tells me that you're someone who wants more. No matter where you are in your life right now, I know you want more. No matter how well you're doing, how challenged you may be, deep inside of you, there's a belief that your experience of life can and will be much greater than it already is. You're destined for your own unique form of greatness. Whether it's as an outstanding professional, a teacher, a business person, a mother, or a father. Most importantly, you not only believe this, but you've taken action. You've picked up this tape, and now you're listening to it. I want to challenge you now to take the next step, the all-important step of actually using it. And now here's my second assertion. if you're willing to accept the challenge and really use the specific technologies you're learning here, you will achieve your dreams. This program, by the way, concludes with a specific plan that will help you to create your own magnificent obsession, your own vision of what it would take for you to have a fulfilling future, a future in which you make a significant contribution to the world and vastly increase the quality of your life in the process, a future where you provide a rich environment for yourself and your family and literally make your dreams real. These are not exaggerated claims. They're achievable goals. I can tell you my own magnificent obsession began with some simple questions. How can I take immediate control of my life? What can I do today that can really make a difference, that can help me and others to shape our destinies? How can I expand, learn, and grow, and share that knowledge with others in a meaningful and an enjoyable way? You see, I truly believe that we all have a sleeping giant within us. Each of us has a talent, a gift, our own bit of genius just waiting to be tapped. And I decided many years ago the most important way I could spend my life would be to invest it in something that would outlast it. I decided that somehow I must contribute in some way that would live on long after I was gone. Today, I have the incredible privilege of sharing my ideas and feelings with literally millions of people through my books and my tapes and television shows. I personally have worked with over 250,000 people in the last few years alone.
Sorry, I have to interrupt, Tony. And I'm sorry that this worked out this way. And like I said, I have just loved listening to Anthony Robbins, and I have listened to him off and on for the last at least 25 years. And he's just a source of encouragement. You can hear his words, the way he speaks, the power in his speech. He's very positive. He helps you. And it's not artificial positiveness. He sees positiveness in everything, and he helps people see whatever your circumstances are that you can find positiveness. I highly suggest, and I don't make any money from this, I just want to share this with you, is find a Tony or Anthony Robbins, same guy, tape, CD, YouTube, anything, and listen to it. And just, I hope you get some happiness from it. You get some motivation from it. It's very, very interesting. It's 9:42, and at the top of the next hour is Kim Justice Show, and it's Recovery Now. Kim is a good host, and she knows her stuff, and her radio shows are always very smooth, unlike mine. So thank you for listening to mine, and I pray that you have a good evening or morning or afternoon, whatever time you're listening to this radio show. Right now it's live, so I pray that you have a good evening. Tony was talking earlier, and he said all these things about find a purpose in your life and write down the purpose. And to prove that I wrote down my purpose in life is to walk hand in hand with other survivors and feel a self of confidence, a sense of self-confidence, both me and you. So Godspeed and good night. Again, stay on for the top of the hour with Kim Justice. Good night.